Listen to the voices of our world.
Oil is more important than human rights.
If these people are not allowed to go back home, they will cease to exist.
Despite being really one of the worst regimes in Africa vis-a-vis human rights, Obiang has met with President Bush.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm Eileen Bott. Like taking candy from a baby. The phrase is used to describe something easily done. The phrase is so familiar because it's done every day. Today we'll bring you two stories from Mother Jones magazine. Tom Price takes us to Botswana, where one of the world's last tribal peoples, the Bushmen, are losing their home in part so that De Beers can hold on to its monopoly on diamonds. But first, Peter Moss exposes the lucrative relationship between U.S. banks, oil companies, and our government with the dictator of Equatorial Guinea, Teodoro Obiang. The dollar is down, way, way down. And you are reminded of that every time you try to scrape together enough of those fading greenbacks to gas up your car. On the other hand, if you've got stock in an oil company, A, you're smart, and B, congratulations. Today, oil is everything. For BBC Newsnight, Greg Pallast has reported that in a series of clandestine meetings, concluding just prior to the U.S. invasion of Iraq in March of 2003, our State Department and American oil interests agreed to sell off all of Iraq's oil fields in the hopes of destabilizing OPEC. If you haven't heard any of this, it's probably because the American media is consumed with tales of Michael Jackson and steroids. As I said, oil is everything. And that leads me to an interesting story, written for Mother Jones magazine by Peter Moss. Most of us recognize that human rights abuse is viewed as a pesky diversion by members of our current administration, and such issues would never trump interest in oil. So now, although the United States closed its embassy in Equatorial Guinea in 1995 due to a threat against our ambassador, our government reopened that same embassy in July of 2002. The reopen came about right after Mobil discovered oil there. Lots and lots of oil. It is estimated that this tiny little country contains at least 10% of all the world's oil, and last year, crude oil accounted for 90% of the value of its total exports. So began the unholy alliance between the United States government, Washington, D.C.-based Riggs Bank, and the brutal West African dictatorship of Teodoro Obiang. Riggs Bank has been investigated for money laundering before, but now the U.S. Senate is looking at a $700 million scheme connecting Riggs Bank with President Obiang. In case you're wondering, the average citizen there lives on about $2 a day. While interviewing sources for his article in Mother Jones magazine, A Touch of Crude, writer Peter Moss was expelled from Equatorial Guinea. Kathy Golden speaks with Peter Moss.
What got you onto this particular story?
There was a Senate investigation that was published in July. At the same time, also, the Senate had hearings on Riggs Bank. And the amount of detail that came out as a result of the Senate investigation, the investigators had powers of subpoena to get documents and account information from Riggs Bank. The amount of detail that they got on the amount of money that Obiang had been shifting around and possessing and moving out of the United States from his accounts at Riggs Bank was really extraordinary. I mean, I've been following kind of oil and how it's handled and what it does to countries for a while now. And of course, we all know that dictators tend not to distribute state funds that come from resources like oil terribly well or democratically. But this was really the first time that such enormous detail had emerged on how much money a dictator had been able to amass from oil, and then what he did with it. That also came out in these investigations at the Senate.
And where does the investigation stand now? Because I haven't heard any follow-up.
Well, you know, as far as Obiang and Equatorial Guinea is concerned, in many respects, the investigation doesn't go any further because although the investigators found that he had accumulated $700 million at one point in his account at Riggs Bank, and although the Senate also found that millions of dollars of that were also kind of siphoned off to offshore companies in the Bahamas and places like that, and although the investigation also found that on some occasions there were cash deposits into his accounts that were in the millions of dollars, none of that actually was illegal. What was illegal, and this is the reason for the investigation, was Riggs Bank handling all these things, facilitating all these cash movements, not asking questions, not filing reports to federal regulators as they should have. Riggs Bank has had to pay so far a $25 million fine. Its executives are believed to be under investigation now for criminal misdeeds. But Obiang himself does not appear to be under investigation because there's no law against the president of a country putting hundreds of millions of dollars into accounts under his control in America and not putting them into use in his country for the benefit of his people, to whom actually this money really belongs.
Hasn't Riggs been in trouble before?
Well, they haven't been in trouble to the extent that they are now. Riggs was founded really about a century ago, but in the past 3 or 4 decades, it did become known as kind of the bank of choice for diplomats and politicians as well in Washington. It has an embassy banking division which caters just to diplomats and foreigners in Washington. It never got into hot water for what it did until now, although it was, for example, the banker to Augusto Pinochet, the dictator. The existence of those accounts, the amounts of money that were in them, actually much of that wasn't known until this Senate report turned up the evidence that it turned up of that. Right now, however, Riggs Bank is in a lot of trouble, although, and this is actually quite interesting, there have been some stories just in the last week or two about how Riggs Bank actually might be tied to the CIA in the sense of some of the accounts at Riggs Bank, not the recent ones that were under investigation by the Senate, but just in the past that there have been accounts at Riggs Bank that apparently were fronts for the CIA to move money to friends or clients overseas. Then there might also even be a paper trail. And that's always most important with investigations when you can actually get documents.
Yeah. So looking at what you do and what you're known to do, what do you write on your visa forms and stuff when you're trying to get into Equatorial Guinea? What do you put down?
Well, this was quite interesting, actually, because of the billions of dollars of American investment there, even though it's a tiny little country. It's one of the very few countries in Africa where if you're American, you don't need a visa to enter it. However, you can get held up at the airport, and they sometimes don't let you in. Other journalists have not been let in the past. And so I did contact ministers in the government, let them know that I was coming. And when I arrived at the airport, actually, and was at the passport counter, and they ask you to write down on a piece of paper what your occupation is, I wrote down accurately oil writer. I did not write down journalist because they saw the word oil, and there was nothing but oil workers in this line with me. So they just let me go straight through. I had no trouble entering the country.
What got you kicked out?
Well, you know, to this day, I don't know what got me kicked out. At the time that I was kicked out, they told me that basically I had been asking too many questions and that they were very upset that I had met openly with the Spanish ambassador. Now, Spain is the former colonial ruler of Equatorial Guinea, and the government of Equatorial Guinea accuses the Spanish government of having some form of involvement with this coup attempt that occurred in March when some mercenaries tried to actually overthrow and kill President Obiang, and the Spanish are accused by the Equatorial Guinean government of being involved in that. So I met openly and innocuously with the Spanish ambassador. Security officers took notice of that, and when I was kicked out, I was told it was because I had met with him. They thought that I was responsible in some way for a story that had been put out on the AFP wire service. I had no involvement with it, but because that story went out at a time when I was the only foreign correspondent in the country, they mistakenly assumed I was involved with it. I think basically it was that I'd been in the country for 2 weeks asking a lot of questions, and they were beginning to get nervous about what I was really up to.
Obiang is a very interesting character. How and when did the U.S. start to sidle back up to him and become friendly? Because wasn't he related to the former leader that the coup was against?
Absolutely. Now, Obiang, his rule has been better than his uncle's, but that's saying very little because of the extreme brutality. And despite being really one of the worst regimes in Africa vis-a-vis human rights, officials of the Equatorial Guinean government haven't really had trouble getting their voices heard in Washington. Obiang has met with President Bush, has met with Colin Powell, and one of the most surprising things, or perhaps not surprising things about this very warm relationship is that the U.S. Embassy in Equatorial Guinea is actually a building that the United States government is renting from a security minister who has been accused, and this is in human rights reports, of himself overseeing torture.
You open this piece, this wonderful piece in Mother Jones, A Touch of Crude, about the anniversary parade. And I'm thinking as you're speaking that people that were lining the streets there with T-shirts or dresses with Obiang's picture emblazoned on them, is that something that one would do for one's own security?
Actually, the reason they do that is because these people are so poor that a new T-shirt is a great gift to them. They need this clothing. Equatorial Guinea, despite having billions of dollars in oil revenue over the last couple of years, in 2004 it was estimated to be about $1.5 billion. 2005 it's going to be $1.5 billion, if not more. Despite this just incredible amount of money, these are some of the poorest people in Africa. And so therefore, on special anniversaries such as Independence Day, such as the day of the coup, such as the president's birthday, when they hand out T-shirts that have his picture on them and dresses that have his picture on them, people grab them because they need clothing. They're that poor. They just don't even have enough clothes.
You're absolutely right. Is there anybody in our government that's uncomfortable at all with being friends with Obiang?
No, there's no sign of really anybody being uncomfortable with the close relationship between the U.S. government and Obiang. It's easy to beat up on the Bush administration for this, but what a lot of people told me, and this is including kind of former U.S. diplomats who had been in Equatorial Guinea, you know, they said probably these days it wouldn't be much different with a Democratic administration. Oil is so important right now to the United States in terms of trying to have guaranteed sources of it and trying to have guaranteed sources that are not from the Middle East. Equatorial Guinea has therefore become very important, and it's very hard to imagine for a Democratic administration to be doing much differently than the Bush administration would do. They wouldn't want to jeopardize this very important and growing relationship because oil is more important than human rights. It's the way it's always been.
Very definitely.
So long as he remains a loyal and reliable supplier of oil who doesn't jeopardize the security or the production of the American oil companies are there, he's doing pretty much everything that the U.S. government, current one, or if there were a Democratic one, probably the Democratic one really want. So I think he realizes that. Now, he also realizes that the moment that Washington gets angry with him, he'd be gone. I mean, these washed-up mercenaries almost got rid of him. And so he does kind of watch his step a little bit. But he's a very smart guy. He's been in power since 1979, and he knows how to play the game very well.
How do you think the Riggs thing will shake out? Will there be any remarkable conclusion to this story?
Well, I don't think there will be any remarkable conclusion to the Riggs story in terms of it having hosted these accounts and not paid attention to federal laws that required it to disclose who held the accounts and what kind of money was being put into it. I imagine that there will be some of the executives of the company will face some form of criminal or civil prosecution that will be covered a little bit on some business pages here or there. But what they're responsible for, you know, wasn't the theft of billions of dollars in pension money or stockholder value or anything like that. And the illegal activities that were conducted there on behalf of Saudis, on behalf of Equatorial Guinean officials, on behalf of the Chilean dictator, you know, I imagine those services will be provided by somebody else, somewhere else.
Well, it's a very interesting piece. Thank you again, Peter Moss.
Who's being ripped off in your community? And by whom? Email us. Go to www.maryknoll.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us. Or you can call us at 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 1-877-MARY-KNOLL.